from Migration Media, this is Migratory Patterns. I'm your host, Mike Shaw. Kira Saroy can kick my ass. At least that's the feeling that I had when we sat down for our chat. It's not that she's mean or puts off an I'm ready to fight you vibe. Rather, there's a solidness to her, an inner strength that demands to be recognized and dealt with. So what happens when a tough-as-nails military brat finds herself butting heads with a machismo-filled culture? Frustration, that's what. Kira and I talk about her journey from bouncing around the U.S. as a kid to the better part of a decade spent in Hawaii, then to her new life in Tasmania, and how she's done it all while staying true to herself. It's an engaging migration story filled with lots of twists and turns, and it opened my eyes to the extra level of difficulty that women can face when they strike out on their own. It's something that I've read about and have been able to intellectualize, but I've never sat down and talked with someone who was able to so passionately communicate the essence of what it means to try to stand your ground when everyone around you just wishes that you'd stop it already. I feel super lucky that she chose to share her story with me, and I think that you will too once you've heard it. So sit back and relax and enjoy my conversation with Kira Saroy. Kira Saroy, welcome to Migratory Patterns.
Thank you.
Where is home?
Oh, I've been asked that quite a few times, especially as a guide and someone who, you know, meets a lot of new people. And where's home? And I always, even when I was a kid, would say like, oh, it's in my chest. Like I'd always be, I'm similar to a turtle, I'd say, you know, like my shell is my home. It's on my back. It's wherever I am. So
it's like a backpacker.
Yeah. Well, a little bit more stable than a backpacker, I think. You know, my dad lives here in Massachusetts, and I lived the longest in Hawaii. And yeah, so I those two are my big ones that I would say.
Mm-hmm. And then how long were you in Hawaii?
10 years.
10 years. And where do you live now?
In Tasmania.
Tasmania. Mm-hmm. And your connection with Massachusetts, which is where we are now, what is, you said your dad lived here the longest?
Yeah, so he was in the military for 30 years. And so growing up, I moved around. And I think Massachusetts is the longest he's been anywhere. And he bought a house in Massachusetts. But he actually works mostly down in Baltimore. So he's constantly moving, like driving up and down from Baltimore to...
Even though he has a home base, he's always on the road.
Yeah. Yeah.
So how did you, you said you moved around a lot when you were a kid,
yeah,
like Army brat thing.
Yeah, Coast Guard.
Coast Guard brat. Well,
yeah.
So a military brat. And so how was that move? You said the longest in Hawaii. How long was that?
Yeah, so I actually went to Hawaii after I graduated high school by myself to go study marine science. So that wasn't even involved with my dad moving or the military. That was on my own.
Wow.
Yeah.
So where were you before Hawaii?
So I was born in Maine, and then we moved when I was two to Kodiak, Alaska.
Whoa.
And yeah, my brother was born in Kodiak, and then we moved to Pittsburgh, and then we moved to Newport, Rhode Island, and then my parents got divorced, and I went to live with my mom in Providence, and my dad continued to move around, but he always tried to stay pretty close. So he was in Connecticut, he was in Hartford, and then I graduated and then moved to Hawaii by myself.
A lot of New England. A
lot of New England, yeah. So like my aunt and my grandma and my uncle and blah, blah, blah. That side of the family, my dad's side of the family is from Jersey. So I got a lot of family in Jersey and New York.
And so then you decided to go on to Hawaii.
Yeah.
How long were you there for?
10 years.
10 years in Hawaii.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You were in Hawaii, you said you were studying marine biology?
I was.
You just decided to go to university and you picked up marine biology?
Oh, no. I wanted to be a marine scientist since I was five.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. What did you do on Hawaii besides school? Like, how long, what were you doing afterwards?
Oh, I was a kayak tour guide. I did snorkel guiding, dolphin swims, parasailing, sunset cruises, reef snorkels, whale watches.
All the amazing stuff.
All the amazing stuff, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Sarla, umumu, nukunuku, apuaha while you were there?
Yeah, we did. Yep, yeah. I've had one bite me. They're very territorial, actually.
I didn't know that about them.
Yeah, no, they're little jerks.
Yeah.
And they've got some strong teeth, and they'll come out and protect their little den.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You're in Tasmania now. How did you get there?
So after Hawaii, I actually was dating someone from Eugene, Oregon. And
That's not Tasmania.
It's not, no.
It's Eugene, Oregon.
I know. This is the story. So we moved to Eugene, Oregon. We were there about a year and a half. And I was working at a brewery and met these two people who were regulars who were also in the bar industry. And so one night, the guy was from Tasmania and the girl was from Kansas City. We were just sitting around after work and he was like, man, it's really hard to make friends in America. And I said, you know what? I think that's true. You know, we only just, you know, meet at the bar and have drinks and woo, oh my God, hey, how are you? And it's very superficial. And it's like, they don't hang out after the bar. That's where you go to say hi to people. So we made an effort to, you know, do some hiking outside of the bar and outside of, you know, the industry and go for bike rides and go rock climbing and just like be real people instead of just barflies. And so it was a budding relationship from there. And then we parted ways because they went to Tasmania to get remarried. And so I actually went out there for their wedding.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So you kind of fell in love with the place?
Yeah, the place and another person. Yeah, actually, I met my boyfriend who is from Tasmania out there. And that's the reason why I'm staying there currently. Mm. I was only planning there to be 2-3 months there. And yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah. That's actually kind of how it happened with my wife. She landed in New Zealand, kind of intending to pass through and then eventually get to Australia.
Yeah.
And she just never left New Zealand. She was there for, I think, almost 4 years.
Yeah. I can't wait to make it out there.
Honestly. Yeah. Yeah. It's on our list. I have a bunch of Kiwi friends as well, and I am also a huge nerd, so I want to go see all the hobbits and the elves and all that stuff.
I know, man. Yeah. Like, that's why I'm like, I just want to go see that area where, like,
So I'm very interested in this kind of dual kind of where you feel you are most, where you most identify as being your formative homes, as being New England and Hawaii. How different are they? Like, I know I've been to Hawaii a couple of times. I'm sorry, one time, but I had it seems like a couple of times, so much happened. But one of my best friends from high school actually, when he was looking for where to go to college, he only looked for beach schools. Like, he legitimately only wanted to go to a college that had a beach or was right next to the beach.
Yeah, so he sounds went like to, he was really into his studies.
Well, he did it. Well, yeah, that was a different story. But he basically applied to schools in Florida, California, and Hawaii.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Ended up going to Chaminade. So he hung out there. I'm pretty sure he drank his first year away. And then with a lot of, that's what you do in college. And then he hung out for another year or two and then came back to New England and finished somewhere else. But I went out and visited him and, man, it's so different. Mm. So different. Like, there's that whole, and my wife also spent time in Hawaii. So she's kind of affirmed a lot of this for me, but it's just the attitude. I don't mean this in a bad way. It's like just the attitude of life out there. It really feels so separate from the rest of the United States.
It is. Well, I mean, it's, if you think about it, you know, Hawaii was its own sovereign state until like the 60s. So there's people still alive that were underneath a sovereignty that wasn't the United States.
Right.
So a lot of the culture out there, especially on the islands that aren't the main island, like Oahu, like the big island that where I lived, where, you know, people are still wanting their sovereignty and as they should, because it's their land and their place and their culture. And so the attitude out there is very separate because it is a separate culture, I think, than the United States. Yeah. But I do want to add something that I forgot. In New Jersey, my grandmother's house and my grandmother, I considered that my home base for a very long time because that's where we would go no matter where we were in the United States. That's where we'd go for our holidays. And the day after I moved to Australia, my grandma died.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And while I was in Australia, the house has been sold and teared down.
Oh.
So, yeah, the physical and the emotional representation is
the whole thing gone. You know, we're Elise and I are kind of at this stage in our migration story where we are, you know, we know we're going to be overseas for the foreseeable future, probably 10, 15, 20 years. Who knows? Yep. We know this is our life. And we're happy about that. But we also find ourselves trying to find a home base isn't the right word, but a place that will be a common touchstone for us during like an annual cycle. So she's a teacher, so she's going to have this kind of Christmas / solstice / New Year holiday thing every year, which will be 2 or 3 weeks.
Yeah.
And then we'll have the summers, which might be, depending where we are, what the school systems are like, something like 6 to 8 weeks.
Yeah.
So where do we go and what do we do during those times? Mm. You know, are we going to – so I've been in Beijing for 10 years, and I've been a full-on Beijing resident. I mean, for the first 5 years I was there, I barely left. You know, I came back to the US once the first 5 years I was there and I had no desire to come back. I mean, I fully invested in being a Beijing Ren, as we say, a Beijinger. Mm-hmm. And I am now looking at this new phase of life where we need to figure out what is it going to be? Like, you know, this holiday season, we have spent time in Sedona, Arizona. And is that what we do every year? Because that's where her parents are. Do we do that? We love it. Is that what we're going to do every winter? Are we going to do something every summer? Do we buy a house somewhere? Like, how do... So I'm kind of really curious about this idea of having kind of a place that is... You feel like it's your cultural hometown, or like the place emotionally you feel like is your touchstone.
Yeah.
And but you lost it. You said it was New Jersey, but you lost it.
Yep.
What do you feel about it? Like, do you have any connection to New England or Hawaii? Would you want to go back there?
Yeah. So, that's a good question. Like you said, that touchstone was New Jersey, and it's completely gone now. And now I have, you know, an extended family through my boyfriend in Tasmania. So logistically and geographically, I think Hawaii actually is the perfect place because it's right in the middle, and it's such a gorgeous place, and I've felt like that was my home for a very long time. You know, for 10 years, I came back to see my family maybe 3 or 4 times. My brother came to visit me a couple times, but yeah, I just, I struggle with the house thing too. I was never thinking about buying a house, and so I would burn through my savings just traveling. And I never really, every time I went to a place like Hawaii or Tasmania or, you know, wherever, I never spent time exploring those places. I hit the ground and I was at work. So it was like a new home. It was never like, oh, I'm going to go travel. So my idea every year to have that touchstone is very torn because I want to work a lot to buy a house now because I have to kind of go back and do the whole...
Where do you want to buy the house? Do you want to buy it in Tasmania?
Not sure. Yeah. I think my boyfriend and I want to do like a plot of land and kind of build on that and have like a nice little like a community thing with some gardens and some like house pods or something. I don't know if we're actually tied to a structure house. We're very outdoorsy and I would live out of a swag if I needed to. But that's the thing. Like, I don't know if I would be... It'd be the same thing every year. And that's what I struggle with because I want to keep that travel bug, but I want to also settle down in a way so I can have a dog, you know, in a garden, because those are the things that are important to me. But, you know, the traveling kind of combats that. And seeing family obviously is really important. So just kind of juggling the financial aspects of all of that has been pretty trying.
Yeah. Some people don't realize, and I didn't even realize until I, you know, got married and started to have to think about family things, is that living overseas is expensive.
Yeah.
My wife and I are looking at possibly flying one or a couple of family members out to visit. Yeah. And we got lucky because on this trip that we're on now, we took a voluntary bump off of a flight and they were paying an absurd amount of money for us to do that. So we got enough money where we think we will be able to fly my brother and maybe her brother out to China.
That'd be so good.
Maybe. We'll see if we can make it work. Yeah. But like that, it's like saving our bacon because we really didn't know how we were going to do that. Mm. Just to fly ourselves back and forth to the U.S. once or twice, yeah, it's like, oh, it's a lot of money.
Yep. And you lose all that time. Like, I struggle with the fact that, you know, my dad's getting older.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. So... The Tasmania thing, I'm very interested. You know, you come from the United States.
Yep.
I've had a conversation with an Aussie who, she's not from Tasmania.
Right.
But I've had a conversation with an Aussie recently and a previous episode, and she talks about the cultural difference that she experienced. She was in high school in Connecticut, actually.
Oh, nice.
She's in Greenwich. Mm-hmm. So basically New York, but you know, it's Connecticut technically.
Yeah.
But she talked about the cultural difference where their practice, the thing that she calls out the most is their practice in Australia is you take the piss to show your affection.
Mm-hmm.
And when she did that, when she got here, it was a real problem because when she liked someone, she would make fun of them.
Yeah.
And then it really caused a problem. So is that like, that's just one thing, but what are the kind of integration issues that you found that you had when you got to Australia?
Okay, so that's really weird because in Tasmania, I'm the one who takes the piss. And they don't react really well to that.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I think they're a little bit more passive in Tasmania.
I hear no, Tassie is different. It's very different.
It's very, very different because if I were to meet someone who'd take the piss, then that would be nice. But I keep just offending people in Tasmania all the time and they all think I'm a jerk. But it's really just my way of showing affection, especially my boyfriend and his family. They're very loving and supporting. And my family is just like, ah, you know.
I've met them.
Yeah, yeah. So it's like you can't even like put a sentence in without getting, you know, insulted, but yeah. That's the way, you know, we say, I love you, I guess. And I'm going to say this on a podcast and I'm probably going to regret it, but, as a female who works in a predominantly male driven, kind of career, I find that, it's difficult to have men in Tassie respect you.
Mm. I hear that's it can be an issue in all of Australia.
Yeah. I haven't
been worked to all of Australia.
Yeah. So I can't speak for that, but I know in Tassie, it's like, even the women don't really stand up for themselves, which really is terrible because those women are badass. Like they are experienced, they are knowledgeable, they are strong, they are wonderful, they're kind, and yet they still don't stand up for themselves and they just act meek when there is a male figure around.
I'll tell you, I saw this happen with Russian women. Mm-hmm. My ex was a Russian and we're still very good friends, and she was just this, man, she's tougher than me. Mm. I mean, I don't know how she did. When she met me, she was on her fifth language, you know, brilliant, yep. Can do anything. I mean, she taught herself Chinese pretty much on her own. Like the first Chinese is broken into six levels, mm. And levels one through three are kind of beginner. You could figure it out if you take some classes, but if you could do it, it's not too difficult. But once you get to four, five, and six is fluency, native level. Five is business fluency. And she taught herself one through four in a year. Pretty much herself. She took some classes, but it wasn't, she didn't go to school full time. People usually go to school full time. Yep. She did it herself in 12 months. In six more months, she got to level five. And then she just got a job. And I was just like, oh my God. Now, every Russian woman that she introduced me to was like this. They were just tough nose. I mean, they live in the freezing cold. You know, you got to be able, tough to survive, right? Yeah. But then the cultural stuff, the male-female dynamic in the culture is very much, what does the husband want? I remember this one moment where we've been together for about 6 months. And we were going out to a friend's party at their house, and I stopped her and I was like, you sure you want to go? Because I know you're a little tired and you don't have to go. We can stay in, whatever. And she just kind of stopped and she got a little sniffle. And I was like, are you okay? You want to stay? She goes, I can't believe you asked me if I want to go out. I'm like, what are you talking about? And she said, in Russia, a man would never do this. I'm like, that's crazy. Like, first of all, it's crazy that men would do that.
Well, just imagine in other places.
Yeah.
Compared to Russia. I mean, there's worse places.
Yeah. I mean, you know, that was the first time it kind of hit me that I, first of all, as a male, I have tons of privilege and I don't understand what's going on. Mm. But just the idea that a woman that strong and that who impressed me that much would be surprised that someone wouldn't treat them as they are just supposed to follow along. Mm. And that she would go along with it. Like, I couldn't compute it in my brain. Yeah. So I can't imagine how frustrating it is to kind of be in that and see it happen all the time.
Yeah. And there's two aspects. I think I've been doing a lot of reflection because my boss actually was sitting me down and was like, hey, you need to work on your communication.
Oh, jeez.
Like people are complaining about working
with you. Are you too, quote, loud?
No, I'm too abrupt and direct.
Oh.
But if a male were to do that, it would be, oh my God, he is the boss. He's so good at his job. But since it's coming from an American young woman, I think that they struggle with that. But at the same time, I find that moving into a country that's an English-speaking country, I kind of took for granted that the communication would be there. And I didn't realize, and that's something that that's my bad, you know what I mean? You just think, oh, they speak my language, so it'll be okay. But the communication is just so different. I feel like if I were to go into a non-English-speaking country, I would have done more research about how to communicate properly and, you know, the little nuances, the way you speak to people. And it is very difficult because, I mean, I at one point was trying to explain, not in my direct way. I was actually trying to work on my communication. So I stopped and I kind of collected my thoughts and started to explain something slowly. And I got called a condescending bitch. And he said, like verbatim, because when you slow down your speech, you're a condescending bitch.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And so it's been pretty difficult to try to balance this is my job. This is how I make my money. You know, this is how I live my life and love my life. And I'm having communication issues with a lot of the men out there and even some women, but it's mostly the men who don't like the fact that I think you know, I think they don't like it because I'm in that leadership role and I'm a direct person and I can delegate. Maybe it's because my dad was in the military and I have that kind of behind me, but it's been difficult recently for sure, because now I'm in a new role and I'm in a leadership role, and being told that I'm condescending or that I'm too abrupt or that I'm too controlling, it's actually pretty like hurtful sometimes. I've been called autocratic, where I think, I don't know if the person actually understood the definition of autocratic. I hope not, because I don't feel like I'm domineering or, you know, dominant or not caring about the people that I'm training. But yeah, it's just, it's trying to be direct and get the job done, because we are at work, you know. It's a guiding thing, and people are like, oh, you know, I'm a guide, so I just get to be cruisy. But at the same time, it's like, we are at work, and that's another cultural difference, because everything for them is just like, oh, you know, yeah, she'll be all right, you know, she'll be good. And I'm, you know, I take pride in my work, and I like to work hard, and I find that they struggle with that working with me when I'm just like, I'm getting shit done.
Yeah, it's a culture clash on so many levels, because you could have a culture clash in terms of the male-female dynamic, but also there's the culture clash just in the way that, you know, Americans, especially New Englanders, and yeah, I don't, you know, we're very drive forward, hard-nosed. Yeah. And then, I mean, I've run into it in China even, like, you know, even in my job in quote, in my real life, when I'm doing this thing, is I've certainly run into it where I'll have an idea, or I want to run a project, or I make a proposal, and it just hits a wall. And then a year or two later, the boss will say, let's try this thing. And it's the thing I suggested, because they, you know, it just has to happen in a different way. Mm-hmm. It's not like a, oh my God, they're stealing your idea. And, you know, it's legitimately, they just have to come to it from a different way. Mm-hmm. You can't break through. You have to actually kind of navigate this whole logical way of thinking, and the business process is just different. So that is a thing you end up butting your head up against. And if you put another layer of a gender dynamic on top, I can't even imagine how frustrating that is. So when you were in Hawaii, I want to back up just a little bit. Yeah. When you were in Hawaii, coming as an Army brat, did you find that, I mean, you were there for school originally, right?
Yeah, so it had nothing to do with my dad being in the military.
Right, right. So, but I imagine when you're starting at school, your cohort at school is also a bunch of people who are kind of coming from a different place, mm-hmm. and you're all figuring out your stuff. Mm-hmm. So I can't imagine that integration wasn't so difficult.
I didn't think it was that difficult for myself, actually. I thought it was, well, the school that I went to, UH Hilo, 6,000 people maybe. Mm-hmm. So very small, pretty local community. A lot of Pacific Islanders, Samoa, Tonga.
Very diverse.
Very diverse, yeah.
And when you stayed after the fact, is the community that's in Hawaii, is it very diverse? Is a lot of immigrants in terms of people not from Hawaii, so it's very used to amalgamating people from other places?
Yeah. I mean, there's not very many, unfortunately, like Hawaiian people that are full-blooded anymore. It's really sad. So there's a lot of people from the Philippines, Portugal.
I'm interested in the dynamic there. So, because like I said, I've only been to Hawaii the one time, and my wife, she kind of lived in a different, she lived up in the sticks, up on the, you know, side of a hill or something. Yeah. So I'm not really privy to this, and I'm fascinated by it. So living in Hawaii and integrating yourself, the idea of a quote Beijinger or a New Yorker, to use an American frame of reference. There's a saying, like, if you're in New York for 5 years, you're a New Yorker. Yeah, there's very few people from there. No. So I guess I was kind of thinking about it. In Hawaii, how many people are from there, has been there a generation or two, even if they're not native?
Well, that's the thing. Like, when you say you're from Hawaii, like, that's why I struggle with saying I'm from Hawaii, because I'm not. Even though I lived there for 10 years, like, if you're not born there, if you're not from, like, a local family, it's just disrespectful to say, like, I'm from Hawaii.
Oh.
Yeah. So, I mean, I always try to say, like, you know, I live in Hawaii, or I just flew from Hawaii, or I've been in Hawaii for 10 years. Like, I'm not from Hawaii.
I've noticed this. A lot of people, I have spoken to people who have been there, and very few would say I'm from Hawaii.
Yeah, no, you don't do it. I mean, it's a respect thing, because, you're not from there.
I would imagine, because the native population is, even though it's small, it is everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
You'd and they have, I know they have a lot of, you know, sacred sites, and they're very involved in the political community, political politics. And I would imagine it's very ingrained in the kind of the culture is to say, if you're not from here, you're not from here.
They actually have a saying, grown here, not flown here.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. It's actually pretty cool. The first time I saw that was actually a bumper sticker on a college door on my first semester out there.
Oh,
and I was like, no shit, that's pretty cool.
That is pretty cool. That's pretty cool. We have a saying in New England, if your grandfather's not from here, you're not from here.
Yeah. So, I mean, culturally, that's pretty similar, where it's like they have a very good sense. And I feel really bad talking about someone else's culture. But, I mean, from my perspective, they have such a beautiful relationship with, you know, the land and the generations that have used that land, no matter how they got there, really, back in the day. But, that was... I've never really felt like I had to integrate too much, just because I've always been the new girl. I've always had to just hit the ground running, you know. I changed schools mid-year sometimes growing up, so I don't feel like integrating was very...
Well, so now you find yourself in Tasmania, and you're in this kind of stage where you're thinking about, you know, a home base or settling down in quotation marks in some fashion. Do you feel like you need to stay in one place to make that happen? Or do you kind of have this, you said you have a travel bug. Do you feel like what you do, for instance, you could go, God, I could think of 20 places in the Pacific that you could go that have these amazing resorts and just amazing snorkeling and all this stuff.
I'm done with hospitality.
Well, you could take your skill set and you could go to so many places. Yeah. Do you have a thought that you will continue to bounce around, or do you have a desire to stay? Like, what's the dynamic like in your brain?
So my desire is to get my PhD.
Okay.
Honestly, it's to go back to school. It's to become a researcher, and through my research, hopefully, I can move around. But at the moment, I think needing to stay in one place to continue my studies is number one, and to do it in Tasmania is going to be what I choose, I think, because my boyfriend's there, because I love my work, because I love Tasmania. And so that's kind of the agenda right now. So what hopefully will happen is, you know, my boyfriend and I will save up, we'll go travel maybe in a year, for a year, and get a little bit of the travel bug out of the way, and then come back to Tassie and get a dog, start have a garden, go to school. And then again, like I said, through hopefully my research, even if it's 7 years down the road, I'll be able to move around and use my job, as I have my entire life, to just be passionate and be outdoors and be able to move around.
There's that thing that exists in the migrant's brain that is kind of like, got to move or want to move or open to move or can't feel like, whenever I come back to the Boston area, I love being here, but after maybe a week, I gotta move. I can't imagine myself, quote, moving back here.
Yeah.
I can imagine coming. I'd love to come here 2 weekends a year.
Yeah.
Or maybe 2 weeks a year, like once in April, once in October. Yeah. I'd love to do that.
Those are good months. Yeah. I'd go May and October.
Well, Patriots Day weekend in Boston is pretty much Mardi Gras in Boston.
Yeah,
and then,
absolutely.
You know, a week, something around Columbus Day, so you can do apple picking, football, baseball playoffs, and, you know, basketball season starts.
That's around my birthday.
That's the best time to be here, really.
Yeah.
But other than that, I really have no desire. And this whole notion of us being on the road for, I remember when I was kind of dealing with the reality of it, we're going to be on the road for 10, 15, 20 years. Not only did it not frighten me, it was just kind of like, okay, that's what it is.
Yeah.
There is going to be a thing where I'm leaving Beijing, and I've been there for, if we leave Beijing, I will have been there for 11 years when we do that, if we do that. And that's a huge thing. I mean, I lived on my own in Boston for 10 years, then I moved here, you know, to Beijing, and I lived there for 11 years. And so that's a huge thing, but I'm also totally cool with it. And from the people I've talked to who are migrants, they're very open to it. Some of them have the bug. Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of curious as to whether or not you're, quote, traveling for a year. We'll actually get it out of your system.
Yeah, no. And like I said, I would love for my job to kind of take care of that, even if it's, you know, going, collecting soil samples somewhere in God knows where for a month, you know, or going down to Antarctica for 6 months and then coming back home, quote unquote, to Tassie or wherever that is.
kind of a migrant lifestyle with the home base.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I think that, you know, having something that I can come back to is nice, because as disorganized as traveling can be, I'd like to, you know, at least put my feet on the ground and get a little bit more organized, kind of decompress, and then, you know, can go from there. Because part of my travel bug isn't necessarily location and geographical movement. I love meeting new people and seeing different cultures, because I feel like, no offense to anybody, but America is very close-minded. As much as we don't think we are, I just took my first flight with Emirates, and to hear the Arabic language on a plane without anybody freaking out was so amazingly beautiful, because you don't get that in America. You know, like I've never flown on that side of the globe. I've never, and it's just, the world is so vast and there's so many people, and just to see my culture and to see people who are English speaking and see people who are white, I just feel like that's an injustice. And I would love to experience other people, and, you know, just, you know, before I die, I'd love to see the diversity of the world.
What does your boyfriend feel about, like, how, like, you, we've talked a lot about you, and you actually, you land in Tassie and you meet this guy. Like, is he someone who is he a migrant as well? Has he had a history of living all over the place?
No, God, no. He's a Tassie boy. And there's a saying, like, a Tassie boy stays in Tassie. And he is incredibly, like, open and accepting, but he hasn't really done a lot of traveling. I think he spent a couple months or a year traveling around, like, Poland and France, and he's in Italy, is where his sister was staying for a little bit, and he has a travel bug too. But Sheffield, where he lives, is a very small town, and his parents came there from, I think, yeah, his mom was from Melbourne, I want to say, and his dad was from Sheffield, but his grandmother actually was from Pennsylvania.
Oh, wow.
So they actually have a lot of American ties through their family. So the joke is that, like, the Tasmanians are always inbred. So if you can get someone from the outside in the gene pool. So I guess I'm doing Tasmania.
Great service. They should have some kind of official state sponsored program to bring in the foreign ladies.
The visa needs to be, you know, the non inbreed. There's a joke that Tasmanians had two heads.
Oh my God.
Because of the inbreeding.
Oh wow.
Yeah. So.
Well, this is kind of an interesting dynamic I haven't run into with anyone before, is this migrant who's, to be crude about it, hooking up with someone, you know, a local who is not, or someone who just isn't a fellow migrant, a fellow traveler. Mm. You know, my wife and I, you know, she's been living on the road for a while when we got together. We met before either of us were migrants, but we didn't get together until we were already on the road. So it's very easy for us to fall into this, oh, we're just going to stay out on the road.
Yeah.
You know, I actually don't know a lot of people, couples that I meet out here in the migrant world who one of them isn't a migrant.
Yeah.
I'm kind of wondering how that's going to work. Yeah, has he traveled with you at all?
Yeah. We went to Hawaii. We traveled really well, and I know that he has a travel bug, but he's very family-based, and his family's still together. It's a very nuclear family in Sheffield, so, you know, he has ties there, and he loves it there, and I'm interested to see where this goes as well, because, I mean, I know I love him, and I want to stay with him, and I don't think I've actually ever seen in my partner or my, you know, person that immigration or that need to travel as something that would be a deal breaker or something that I'm attracted to. I always knew that, like, I would do what
you're gonna do it, and you're gonna do it if your guy's cool with it, it's the right guy, and if he's not, then see you later.
Yeah. Well, that happened with the guy that was in Oregon, who's still in Oregon, but
I find it interesting that I ended up with an American woman.
Yeah. And that's funny that you said that, because Justin, my partner, actually started before me, dated someone that he met in Poland, but was from Australia.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah.
Yeah. It's, I kind of looking back when I was dating my Russian girlfriend, and it was, it seems silly. Like, I go to China and I start dating a Russian, and I mean, I love the experience. I loved her, and we're still good friends, like I said, but is very surreal. I also grew up as a Cold War kid, so that experience to me was very surreal. But it also kind of made a sense, because I'm overseas. I should be dating someone who's also overseas. But the fact that I would fall in love with and marry the love of my life would also be an American is almost kind of like, what am I do this for?
Hopefully you're not just going around going to different countries just to sample the women.
Exactly. So. Well, I wasn't doing that. But there's, you know, there is that kind of thing, like, okay, well, if I'm going to meet a fellow migrant, it's in my cohort. Well, it's going to be someone else who's overseas, and it's going to be a non-country person. But it was. It was kind of surprising.
Yeah, right. Because I wouldn't even think of that. Like, I just I deal with my attraction on a personal basis. Like, if you're attractive, then, you know, if we get along, we get along. Doesn't matter where you're from.
This is a little... So after
taking a left turn here.
Yeah, after this crazy thing happened in my brain after I broke up with my Russian girlfriend. Well, it's a mutual thing, and you know, after the kind of the recovery period, the first person I kind of went on a few dates with was a German woman, and really dug her, really liked her, and it never got very far. But in that beginning stages, I was kind of like, oh my God, I'm dating a German. And I asked her where she was from. I was like, are you from West Germany or East Germany? And she said she was from West Germany. I was like, oh my God, I don't know if she's, can I date a non-Eastern European? Like, I was so kind of in this, I have to date a quote foreign woman. Like, because I'd been doing it for so long and I kind of thought that's what I was supposed to do. Mm-hmm. And a West German, yes, she's German, but it's also Western Europe. It's very Western. Like, it's not different enough.
Yeah.
And I felt like I had to date someone who was totally different.
Yeah.
And it didn't even dawn on me that I could date or fall in love with an American who was who had all the differences. Yeah. Like, my wife and I were so different in so many ways. And that's one of the reasons that we work so well together. And I wonder about this with other migrants is, do you get caught up in this, I have to be overseas, or how does it affect your relationships? Mm. You know, I'm someone who travels. Can I be with someone who isn't someone who's also always traveling?
Yeah.
So that's why what's interesting with me about your relationship is you're this person who's been on the road your whole life.
Yeah.
Why are you with the Tassie boy?
Yeah. He's awesome. Yeah. I mean, I don't see other cultures as a novelty for me to like, oh, I have to date someone different. I have to go to Southeast Asia and date a Laos guy, you know? I don't see like people as a novelty to try to like,
but even the migrant thing, you know, that's what I mean.
Yeah. I mean, he's just amazing and I love him and that's it. That's it. You know,
we're going to have you back on in a couple of years because I want to know how it goes with this trip overseas that you take your 1 year on the road together.
Yeah.
I want to know if either you turn him into a migrant or if he turns into a total homebody.
Yeah. I think the latter.
You think the latter?
Yeah. And I'm looking forward to that because again, it's been tiring to keep moving and to keep, like, I have so many friends.
You've also been doing it for so long.
I've been doing it for so long. And I feel sometimes my identity is it's really confusing to me, especially when I meet new people, because as the person who always is the new girl, it's like I have almost, I don't want to say a superficial and a fake, but I mean, I can make friends, I can be charismatic, and then, you know, like, I in the back of my mind, I'm like, I'm not going to see this person again. And it breaks my heart, but then it's also like a protection for me because I've lost so many friends as a child. And so like meeting new people, I'm like, hey, like I love your personality. Like if I were to stay, we would be close friends. And that's like with Elisa, honestly, like you guys, I would hang out with you.
Just move to wherever we're at next. Then you can hang out with us all the time.
Yeah. But I mean, like it's that thing in the back of my mind. Like I start meeting people that I really like and I'm like, oh God, I'm not going to be able to form a deep relationship with this person, and it's heartbreaking.
This is the TCK experience. This is what I talked to the Aussie I referred to before, Tanya Crossman. She was on the show a little while back, and she researches this with children, and she's actually started to – well, she researched it with millennials. And she's now going to switch her research. Her next project is going to be talking with people in their 20s. Mm-hmm. You know, so the – who have lived this experience that you're talking about, how has it affected their identity? How has it affected their ability to have relationships? People don't really study this.
Especially with social media.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to say just millennials, but everybody feels so connected through social media. And you still have like, oh, I have my Facebook because I have international friends. But it's like, how are you keeping that an actual relationship when it's just social media? It's just liking people's pictures. It's not an actual, like I used to have pen pals. I used to love writing people and it's just lost now. And it almost feels super empty to just like someone and tap things and that's the relationship instead of, hey, do you want to meet me in Sweden? Do you want to, you know, come to my friend's wedding? Do you want to be pen pals? And it's just... It's hard to have an idea of what kind of relationship you should have.
I wonder what the point is for everyone where you get to the limit of how long you can kind of endure that. Or maybe endure is the wrong word, because then it sounds like it's something that is you're trying to work through. It's just maybe it's, so I was talking with your dad actually earlier. He was asking me what, you know, about living overseas and the time change and what I do for work. And I told him about my experience was when I worked the overnight shift at my, when I got to China, I for the first 3.5 years, I worked from 10 p.m. to 6 a.m. So New York business hours in Beijing. Mm-hmm. And I got really sick after 3 years. I got like a cold that turned into something in my lungs, and I couldn't catch my breath, and I was even coughing blood a little bit.
Went to
the, it would have been easier.
Yeah.
But I got to the doctor, and of course, because I'm a dude, I waited a couple of weeks to go to the doctor. By the time I got there, it had started to clear up, and he couldn't find anything wrong with me, did a blood work, all this stuff. And my girlfriend at the time, she said, I don't trust that. We got to get you to a different doctor. So we went to an American doctor. The Chinese doctor we saw was fine. He was trained in America, but she wanted an American doctor to talk to me. And she was right, because the American doctor took a proper history. So he kind of was able to speak to me on a cultural level where he took a proper history. And when I told him what I was doing, working overnights, he said, oh, that's why you're sick. Like, you probably got this bacterial infection, was exacerbated because you've been nocturnal for 3 years. You can't do that anymore. Your body is not designed to do that. Mm-hmm. So how long is the human animal able to have this kind of existence that is migratory before your body in some way, whether it's your heart, your mind, your spirit, your physical self, rebels?
Yeah.
Is it something that we rebel against? Can we live that way? Mm-hmm. Or is it just a natural kind of amount of time anyone can, and it's different for every person? I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, it sounds like for you, you're kind of reaching the limit.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And even coming here to the wedding, I just find myself, I'm still the outsider. Even though this is my family, I still feel like I have to almost walk on eggshells.
And you can't be you.
I can't be me. And it's my family. And if I can't be me with my family, it's like, shit. Like,
I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah. And yeah. So it's just like, yeah. Where do I go? What do I do?
Well, you're on this journey. And I'm like I said, we got to keep in touch, because I really do want to have you back after you, or maybe you're in the middle of this trip. You'll come wherever we are and we can check in with you and we'll see. You're the experiment. That's what we'll do. We'll turn you into our case study.
Shit. Yeah. What did I sign up for? No, I'd love to. Yeah. Cause I'm interested to see where it goes to, because I just, the feeling it is not a good one when you don't feel like even at home with your family.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We got to figure that out.
Yeah.
Well, Kira, thanks so much for coming on. Yep. I appreciate you sharing your story with us.
Yep. Thank you.
Well, there you have it. I'm so excited that Kira shared her story with me. She's given me some new insights that I'm already eager to explore with future guests. I'd love to hear from you. Let me know what you thought of Kira's story. Can you relate? Does it ring true? Do you know someone else I should talk to about it? Reach out to me at mike.shaw@migrationmedia.net. You can also find me on Twitter. I'm at ZAX2000. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next week.